Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. A quick reminder before we get started, any advice provided by Brandon is general and does not consider your financial situation, needs, or objectives, so consider whether it's appropriate for you. Brandon van der Kolk is authorized to provide general financial product advice in Australia and is authorized representative number 1305795 of Guideway Financial Services Proprietary Limited, AFSL number 420367. Please see the description box for Brandon's financial services guide. Past performance is not a reliable indication of future investment returns. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hamish was just saying we should maybe start each episode with a bit of a sing along.
Yeah, we should have a new jingle every week, like a little, or just like, should we have the same one, like the same song every week, or should it just be like a new thing, like, you know?
Well, we already have that jingle at the start of the episode, but yeah, maybe we should come up with our own original one.
Yeah, we can sing it live, off the cuff, improv.
I don't know. All right, take us away, Hamish. Running off of 3 hours. No. This could be interesting. He backs out so quickly.
You can start.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Yeah, welcome definitely. Back to the Young Investors Podcast.
Doo-doo-doo-doo. Maybe a week where I've had a full night's rest. We could attempt that, but I'm on very minimum. I'm on 10% battery at the moment. I didn't sleep too well last night, which is unfortunate. But we'll make it work.
Your sleep has been ruined. What is going on?
Yeah, my sleep's always been bad, but it's been particularly bad recently. But yeah, let's not make this a medical, Hamish's medical history podcast again.
Like, I think people were vibing it. I think like for one of the podcasts, we spoke for like 13 minutes on like
this. And all the comments are like, do you have glandular fever when you were a child? Yeah, like everyone's invested. Yeah. So everyone's so invested in fixing this.
I mean, we're essentially playing doctor. We're basically house at the moment. We're trying to figure out what's wrong with you.
We're doing everything except what I should do, which is just get professional help. But
it only happens when you're sleeping.
No, I am getting help.
And then you walk into the physio and they try and reproduce the pain and they're well, nothing hurts because it only happens when you're sleeping. Yeah. So it's hard.
Now we're working on it. I'm keeping positive. It'll be fixed soon.
Yep. Yeah. Everyone keep sending in your thoughts and recommendations. So we've had glandular fever. That could be a potential. Anything else it could be, let us know down in the comments.
Yeah.
Back pain, difficulty sleeping only happens at night. You wake up, it's a bit sore in the morning, but then you get going and you're fine, right?
Yeah, it could almost be anything. That's like the symptoms of pretty much every illness ever. So,
all right, well, we'll see. We'll see what people can come up with, but we need help. Hamish needs help. I don't need help. I'm fine. All right, Hamish, what on earth should we be talking about today?
Yeah, we've got earnings season a little bit. We've got a couple of companies talk about. Yeah, crept up pretty quickly. I didn't really notice, to be honest. So we've got Netflix and we'll talk about Tesla as well. And then we'll also get into our regular news as well. There's a couple of central bank kind of interest rate inflation news pieces from around the world that I'll kind of pile together into a quick summary so we don't spend too much time on it. Cool. And then what else have you got?
This is so funny. I'm going to talk about, you know, Trump's social media platform, Truth Social.
Yeah. Yep.
Guess who's on there? The most unlikely person you could think of to go on Trump's social media platform.
I don't know, like Barack Obama, Joe Biden.
Joe Biden is on Truth Social. So we'll talk about that a little bit. 30-year fixed mortgage just hit 8% for the first time since 2000. So we'll talk about that as well.
Yeah.
And hopefully get to a couple of questions at the end as well.
Yeah.
Tesla. I'm talking about Tesla earnings as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, with that said, today's episode is brought to you by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. view buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics, access up to 10 years of financial data and company filings, and manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with price alerts so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 7 days. And you can still get that $50 off coupon if you sign up using our link. So seekingalpha.me/younginvestors. Go check it out if you haven't already. And as always, thanks to those who have used our link when signing up to Seeking Alpha and are supporting the podcast.
Now let's get into another episode.
Yeah, we do it every time we like transition to a new story.
It's a segue. And no. To start things off today, we're going to talk about Netflix.
Yeah.
Go, Hamish.
Should we start with Netflix? Yeah.
Do you want to?
Yeah, let's get straight into some earnings. We always end up covering Netflix and Tesla because they both report on the same day and they're both companies that we kind of find interesting to follow, although they're two kind of very different companies. They're not kind of similar at all.
We'd love to do Netflix and Disney in the same, but I think Disney is one of the last to report.
Yeah, they don't report for a while.
They're still a few weeks away, I think.
Yeah, that is the unfortunate thing, right? We usually get like Meta Platforms and Google usually in the same week, I think, although not the same day, but usually the same week. So I wish they would like lump other companies together.
Nice.
I think they lump the banks together, right? All the banks usually report first. They get lumped together. So there must be some sectors or industries that do it like that, but then others are all just spread out all over the place. But anyway, so Netflix reported revenue of $8.5 billion, which was up 7.8% year over year. So still, a lot slower growth than before this kind of slowdown, although their growth is starting to kind of pick up. I think they grew at like 3 or 4 or 5% last quarter, and the quarter before that was like flat. So they're slowly starting to kind of build up their growth again. And when we're talking about Netflix revenue growth, we're talking about growth that's really coming from two places. One is subscribers and then how much revenue they're getting per subscriber. On the subscriber front, they added 9 million subscribers during the quarter, which is a huge milestone because it's not only a high amount for the recent quarters where they've been really struggling to add subscribers, but it's actually one of their biggest quarters ever. If you remove the kind of pandemic subscribers, which were very, very abnormal, I believe it's the biggest quarter they've ever had for subscriber additions.
Well, that's what I was going to talk to you. That's what I was going to say is that I'm pretty sure that back in that onset of the pandemic when everyone was at home and they just signed up for Netflix, I'm pretty sure they added, what was it, like 12 million in a quarter, somewhere around there?
Yeah,
or they might have even had a bigger quarter than that.
Yeah.
But this definitely is reminiscent of those quarters where people were locked down just signing up for Netflix because that's all they could do with their lives.
Yeah.
So that's very impressive. Do they mention like a reason as to why? Has it got to do with the ad, the crackdown on the sharing accounts and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So they gave a few reasons, as kind of all companies generally like to not shed too much light on specifically what it was. But one of the big factors, of course, is that they've continued to roll out the account sharing crackdown. And it's turned out to just be much more effective than they anticipated. They, of course, thought that with the crackdown, they would be able to retain some of those people who were kind of using Netflix for free. But it's worked, you know, much better than they expected. I think last quarter was about 5 or 6 million subscription additions. And then this quarter being 9, so it's, you know, 14, 15 million additions, which compared to the quarter before that was like basically no additions. Remember, they had their complete slowdown. They even lost subscribers for a couple of quarters. So they've really completely turned around their slowdown by doing this crackdown and some of their other initiatives. So it's really interesting to see. Total subscribers now are at 247 million. So they're coming up on the big 250. Jeez. An enormous platform. And again, to be able to add any subscribers really at that size is kind of crazy. Like, there's no other platforms that are even close to that means
it's a lot of people, isn't it? It's a lot of people. They're definitely number one.
Yeah, I think there was, I think there's like 800 million households globally that have access to the internet outside of China who can't access it. So, to get to 250 of 800 million in the whole world is kind of
That's
crazy.
A lot.
Because obviously, even if you have internet in your household, it doesn't mean that you're going to be wanting to pay for entertainment. That's been traditionally a very American thing. So to be able to export that internationally, especially into, you know, Asia and that sort of thing, is kind of crazy.
Yeah, crazy stats.
So yeah, so they were obviously very happy on the subscriber side. Then there's the average revenue per membership side. Average revenue per membership declined by just 1%. So Netflix has been rolling out, and this is really just because they've been rolling out their ad-supported tier. So they now offer this in 12 different countries. And in those countries that they offer ads, the ad-supported tier, 30% of users are on the plan. So it's been incredibly popular, wow, this ad-supported tier, which again is something that Netflix didn't even want to do a couple of years ago. And they've decided that to follow after Hulu and some of these other platforms in trying to do it. So as a result of that, their average revenue per member has gone down slightly, but it's only 1%. And that's, you know, at the same time as they're boosting their sub numbers. So obviously this change in kind of mix of plans of ad supported and premium is working, at least.
That's working, mate. So yeah, including the ad supported tier, so total, everything, the average revenue per member's only declined by 1% year over year.
Yeah. So it
through
means
the introduction of this ad-supported tier, which is, well, free for people, or they still have a base membership price?
So you pay, I think in the US, it's $7 a month. And then the basic with ads, or without ads, I think was $11 or $12. So they've got to basically make up $5 per month in ads. It's essentially, if they assume that people might, you know, switch from the basic ad to go to ads, if that makes sense.
I see. That's pretty impressive that they figured it out.
Yeah. And I guess it's early days. We'll kind of see how it keeps rolling out. But it's obviously been incredibly popular. I mean, they're only in 12 countries, but yeah, 30% of users in those countries on ads is crazy. I mean, to think that maybe someday 30% of their entire business is on this ad-supported tier that is potentially a layer of people that would just never consider Netflix because it's too expensive or they just don't want to have that in their budget. And now they can, you know, pay $5-6 a month and get access to it. So it's this kind of whole new market that I think Netflix didn't really consider too much.
Slow reversion back to cable.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So in terms of income, operating income came in at $1.9 billion, which was up 25% year over year. So massive growth in terms of their profits. All of their subscriber growth this year has come from without needing to spend more money on content, which is also really impressive. So content spend actually declined from $17 billion to $15 billion this year. So even though they were able to grow a lot this year, their content spend has actually gone down. And that's led to their operating margins expanding to 22.4%. So yeah, 8% top line growth in their revenue. That equates to 25% growth in their profits, which is obviously very good.
That's very handy.
They also shared an interesting graph that kind of demonstrates the scale economics of their business over time, because there's kind of been a lot of doubt, I think, about the streaming business and whether it can be a viable business over time. And they kind of just showed this chart of kind of content spend and their operating margin. And back in 2016, they were spending about $5 billion in content annually, and they had an operating margin of -4%. And then today they're spending $15 billion on content with an operating margin of 20%. So they're kind of showing that as they've spent more on content, they're benefiting from these scale economics. Even though they're spending four times as much on content, which people were kind of worried that, you know, they're spending way more on content, even though they're doing that, that additional content spend is being spread across a very large customer base. So their margins have just kind of expanded at an enormous rate. Which I thought was interesting to kind of include, because there has been like a lot of doubt, I think, shed on the streaming business as kind of all of these media companies try and get their piece of the market.
I think that's even what we were talking about a few years back. I feel like Netflix as a business looks quite a bit different to how it was. Even like, when were we talking about it? 2018, 2019?
Yeah, probably even 2020, probably even during the pandemic, I would say.
Even 2020,
But yeah, they were spending way more money than they were bringing in, and the economics looked terrible. They were piling up debt. They were burning cash. Yeah, they were growing subs, but there was really nothing to show from it from the actual business. Yeah. So yeah, it is interesting to see them kind of go through that transformation. I think investing back then would have been, you know, you would have been really praying that they figured it out. I think, you know, you could argue that they have kind of figured some things out today. And so the business is a lot more stable and, you know, but yeah, it is interesting. At least, yeah, certainly we definitely spoke about Netflix as one of those businesses we would probably stay quite far away from just a few years ago.
Mm. When did you start getting more interested in it? I was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah. So the beginning of 2022, the end of 2021.
That's right. Because it crashed. Yeah. The stock went down. I'm looking at it now. It went down 72%.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
Holy smokes. That's right. That's right. Well, you'd be sitting on a very handy return. Yeah, that's the secret. There's your margin of safety right there.
Yeah, it's
so you were interested in when early 2022. So from there to now, it's up like 85%. That's
yeah.
Well done, Hamish.
It's it's been one of those examples like Meta, I think, where there was just such a dramatic shift away in like a shift towards pessimism and then a shift towards optimism. So if you had the opinion that things were going to be optimistic, when things were pessimistic, you've done really well. Same with Meta platforms. I don't know. I wasn't involved in that Meta trade, but we've seen a couple of those very dramatic shifts over the last couple of years. And I think like the pandemic and interest rates and inflation have kind of created a couple of opportunities like that, which has been kind of nice to see. Mm. But anyway, regardless, from a business perspective, it's interesting to observe as well. I've been watching Netflix as a business for a while because I always was curious about it.
Cool.
Yes. And then in terms of, they talk a lot about engagement, because kind of the core driver of Netflix is, of course, you know, they can change things to the plans and add ads and that sort of thing. But ultimately what makes Netflix good is the content and how they engage their subscribers. So they always share a lot of data, at least out of the US on engagement, which is where most of the data comes from. Netflix had the number one original series for 37 out of 38 weeks, this year so far. And the number one movie for 31 out of 38 weeks so far. So they're able to kind of rival pretty well some of the big media companies, even on movies, which has been a weak point for Netflix.
That's pretty telling, I think. That is some dominance. Number one original series, 37 out of 38 weeks of the year. Number one movie for 31 of 38. That's pretty impressive stats, I think.
Mm. Do you want to know what the number one show this year so far has been by a landslide in terms of watch hours on streaming platforms?
I'm trying to think of what it might be.
It's a show that's not still running, so it's finished. It actually finished, I think, in 2019 or maybe 2020, around that time. Six seasons long, and it's crazy because it's not running anymore.
What is it?
And it's Suits. Of all shows.
Oh, no way.
Suits is the number one show by a landslide. It crushes all original content, everything. It's currently streaming on like Netflix and a couple of other platforms, so that probably helps. It's like available on a couple of platforms.
That's so interesting.
How crazy is that? It just shows that, you know, some of these legacy shows have a lot of value. I think streaming services help unlock that in a way, because then people can just can go back and rewatch. They don't have to wait for a rerun on a cable channel. They can just... They can just watch it. So it's interesting to see. But yeah, I would not have thought Suits, of all things.
No. I mean, it's a great show. I was thinking more like, you know, how like Squid Games came in and it just like overtook the world and everybody watched. Yeah. I was like thinking, what's been this year's version of
something's
that?
Something's been pumping, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But no, Suits, that's crazy. I've never watched Suits all the way through.
It's very good. Yeah.
Yeah? You like it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably one of my favorite series. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
But yeah.
Harvey? What are they? Harvey and Mike? Is that right?
Mike, yeah. Yep, I haven't watched it in a while. I have to.
You can't remember.
We have to pull it up.
Do another rerun. Mm. No, that's awesome. Anyway, sorry.
Just a couple other things. Oh yeah, so in terms of engagement, they still have the highest share of TV screen time, only behind YouTube, which has just been a beast at grabbing screen time. So yeah, YouTube and Netflix are kind of up there. So Netflix total TV time is 7.8% in the US at the moment. The next closest is Hulu and Amazon Prime, which each have 3.6% share. And then Disney, Max, Peacock, and Paramount, all their platforms have about 1%. So they're kind of the three tiers of streaming services, at least in the US. In terms of cash and debt, they're now expecting $6.5 billion in free cash flow for 2023, which is an enormous amount of cash flow for the business. And part of that is because they're spending a little bit less on content this year, but they've been able to do that while kind of retaining and growing their sub base. They still have net debt of $7 billion. They're not opting to pay down the debt. They seem fairly happy with that level of debt, which is something I'd like to see them pay the debt down. But instead, they're doing what every company does, which is they're doing share repurchases. they did $2.5 billion of share repurchases in the quarter, and then they authorized another $10 billion in repurchases. Unfortunately, it's what companies like to do. And, especially in this environment, interest rates are very uncertain over the next couple of years. So I don't know if companies should be too confident that they're just going to be able to roll that debt into something that's of similar interest rate. We don't really know. I mean, we could be looking at 3 years down the road, interest rates are 5% higher than today. Probably not, hopefully not, but maybe they are. And hopefully companies like Netflix are prepared for cases like that, because that's a big increase in the interest expense.
I think they did have $12 billion in debt. So to get it back down to seven is something.
Well, it's net debt. So they have.
Oh, sorry.
So total debt is, I think, 14. Sorry, yeah, they have like bad. 14 billion. So it's still in that range, but they have like $7 billion in cash just sitting on the balance sheet.
Sorry,
They did just authorize $10 billion in repurchases. So they're probably gonna dump that $7 billion or a large part of that into share repurchases, which. I'd like to see him pay down the debt just because I'm a conservative. I want him to be on the conservative side.
It's a smart play. I mean, you're locking in a good return, because when you have to roll over that debt, you're going to be crushed with an interest rate that's very, very high.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's corporate debt. I mean, I'm sure I don't exactly know what their interest would be, but it would probably be pretty high. Probably be 7-8% or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's not a small interest rate. They can get a good return just by, as you say, just paying it down. So yeah,
that would be smart, yeah, Hamish. That would be smart.
I'll let him know. I'll send him an email.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think you'd be the first to send him an email saying that.
No,
I don't think you'd be the first.
But yeah, that's it. The market was happy. His stock was up about 12%. So market's happy. I'm happy.
There you go.
That's it.
Nice. Happy days.
Yeah.
Happy days. All right, Hamish. 12%, that's a big climb. It's a very handy climb. Was I even factoring that in? I don't even think I was when I gave my little return.
Nah,
that's hectic. Look at that. That's big. All right, Hamish, what should we talk about next?
Let's just keep rolling into earnings, I think. Earnings. Give us Tesla earnings.
We'll talk about earnings. This one won't take me too long because the conference call is happening literally as we speak. So I can't listen to it because I'm recording a podcast. So if there's anything revolutionary that happens in the conference call, I'll come back and talk about it next week. But Tesla stock, a little bit different to Netflix. Tesla stock was down 4% after they released their earnings report. We spoke about their vehicle deliveries a few weeks back. So they delivered 435,000 cars for the quarter, which was up 27% year over year, but it was down versus last quarter. That's right. And the reason for that was they were retooling a few factories as they've got the new Model 3. I think that's coming to Australia, actually. Very exciting because they've retooled their Shanghai factory. Anyway. Going off track, revenue came in at $23.3 billion, which is up 9% year over year and very slightly down quarter over quarter. Gross margin came in at 17.9% versus 25.1% year over year. So gross margin is sliding. It is under pressure. It has gone from 25, this is quarterly, it was 25, then it went to 23, then it went to 19, then it went to 18, and now it's at 17.9. So gross margins are sliding.
Are they each of the last few quarters?
Yeah, a few quarters, up until the most recent, which was 17.9. Operating expenses are up 43% year over year, predominantly driven by the Cybertruck, which they are building out. They haven't gotten any revenue yet from Cybertruck, but they've had to make all of that investment. and also their AI projects. And that's one thing that Elon just keeps hammering on about is the future of Tesla is AI, AI, AI. He just says the key to unlocking basically all of Tesla's future value in his eyes is getting full self-driving sorted and getting a functional, helpful humanoid robot up and running. So that will be interesting to see. But yeah, at the moment, it is bumping up their operating expenses. Now, what does that mean for their operating income? Operating income was down 53% year over year, and operating margin was down to just 7.6% versus 17.2% a year ago.
Right. Wow.
So 17.2 down to 7.6.
Yeah.
And that helped net income came in at just $1.85 billion, down 44% year over year. So yeah, there's no doubt they are facing a little bit of margin pressure, but they are also, as a part of that, they are investing reasonably heavily at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine a fair portion of the gross margin decline is related to inflation and other factors. Although I think they were also specifically lowering some of the prices of their vehicles, right?
As well,
so that's going to hurt their gross margin.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be too surprising, I think, to see an automaker go through big cycles of you know, gross margins expanding and everything's rosy, and then gross margins collapsing or operating margins collapsing, and you know, well, most auto companies you know have periods where they lose money when they go through these cycles. So it's not, you know, super I think unexpected for this kind of business.
Yep, and I think of the EV makers, Tesla's probably the best positioned.
Oh yeah,
because they have a profitable, you know, their business is profitable.
Yeah.
Even if it has a slim profitability for a while, they are still profitable. And yeah, automakers go through cycles. Now, in terms of cash flow, so they had $3.3 billion in operating cash flow. Their CapEx, however, was quite a bit higher at $2.46 billion. So it left them with just $848 million in free cash flow. So not a huge chunk of free cash flow. However, it's something, it's positive, and they currently have $26 billion as a cash cushion. So they do have a bit of they do have quite a solid cash cushion sitting on the sidelines. Elon's spoken in the past, he wants to deploy some of that cash.
Right.
But he wants to do it, obviously, everybody that manages to come, they want to do it effectively. They don't want to just burn money. And he thinks that he is investing money at the fastest rate he can in the company without it just being wasted by just trying stuff that they don't really know what to do with.
You know what he should do? You know what he should do with that $26
billion? Do a buyback?
Yeah, he should just do a massive buyback. I think that's probably the most effective thing he could do with it. In fact, he should take on some debt, add to that pile a little bit, maybe bring it up to $40 billion, and then do a buyback.
Yeah. Use it all on a buyback. Yeah, so then you've got heaps of debt, but the shareholders are happy.
For a period of time.
You know, yeah.
Until the company goes bankrupt.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the sad thing is, I think it was earlier this year or even late last year, Elon was messing around with the idea of doing share repurchases.
Yeah.
I was like, ah.
I think it's just such a temptation for management. Like it's a lever that's just sitting there on their desk, like a golden lever that's like just like a way out of all of the pressure from analysts and investors. Like, you know, the stock's not doing well, analysts have got questions, and you get to see this lever or this button, this golden button on your desk, and you're like, if I just push that button, I can stop it for 3 months. I can stop the pain. It's got to be and it's really no, and it probably boosts their compensation too. So it's got to be so difficult, like I mean, we see most management teams don't like some do egregious share repurchases, some, you know, trickle in little ones here and there, but it is it does show restraint when a manager can hold back from doing share repurchases.
use your money on something else.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about other operational kind of stuff. They had 49 megawatts of solar deployed. They had 3,980 megawatt hours of battery storage deployed. That's going quite well. That was up 90% year over year. So all their grid scale batteries, their whatchamacallit, power walls, that kind of stuff, that part of their business is growing. And there was a time where Elon said that that business, that battery storage business, has equal potential to like the automotive business, especially with how the grid, you know, needs to transition to renewables. And obviously we need to store that energy. It's just that for the last few years, definitely the auto business has just powered ahead. But they are cell restricted. They are battery cell restricted. Yeah. So as they get, as they make, excuse me, more and more of their own battery cells, that should help their storage business. Excuse me. Okay. Interestingly, I just chucked this one in because it's interesting. They have 51,105 supercharger connectors around the world. 51,000. That's a lot.
That's a crazy number. Yeah.
Probably doesn't hold a candle to the number of petrol pumps,
but
it's still impressive. It's like building. People say, oh, there's nowhere to charge. Well, it's 51,000 connectors. Yeah. And technically, if you see a wall outlet, you've got a charger.
Yeah.
So that was up 31% year over year. Yeah. In terms of their gigafactories, Giga Texas, they are currently doing pilot Cybertruck production. So Cybertruck production has begun at a pilot level. They noted in their earnings release that deliveries begin November 2023. So we are almost there. Yes, I know deliveries were supposed to be like last year. However, it looks like it's finally happening. They got this great shot in their earnings release where there's like the Tesla Semi and it's stacked up full of Cybertrucks. Oh, looks so cool.
Wow.
Looks so cool.
Yeah, it's going to be bizarre. I guess we probably won't see too many of them here in Australia for a long time, but that would be so bizarre to see like numerous Cybertrucks on the road. Like, I just can't, like, I've only seen videos of it, obviously, but that would just be strange.
It's going to look...
It's going to be weird.
Well, it's going to be
Because they're just so different. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Hamish, what else was I talking about? Gigafactory Shanghai is running at full capacity and it has done for several quarters, which is great. Berlin's almost at full capacity for the moment. They note, despite macroeconomic headwinds, our planned factory shutdowns in Q3 and ongoing ramp at new factories, our average vehicle cost was around $37,500. So I just put that in there because I think that was interesting. So on average, their cost was $37,500 to make a car, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
This is the thing I wanted to talk to you about in terms of their outlook, right? So most companies, they give some level of guidance. Okay. But this, and I've never looked into Tesla guidance, to be perfectly honest. I don't like the idea of trying to model out how many cars they're going to be making in 2027 because I think that number, I don't think I can pull an IMF
and try and predict what China's economy is going to be doing in 15 years.
exactly right. By the way, I've just put into the doc, that's the picture of the Tesla Semi with all the Cybertrucks. It looks pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. That's nice.
But anyway, back to this outlook, right? So they say here in their earnings release, we are planning to grow production as quickly as possible in alignment with the 50% compound annual growth rate target we began guiding in early 2021. In some years, we may grow faster and in some we may grow slower, depending on a number of factors. For 2023, we expect to remain ahead of the long-term 50% compound annual growth rate with around 1.8 million vehicles for the year. Hamish... It's nuts. However, I don't think if I was Elon, I would be guiding 50% compound annual growth rate of production and deliveries of a complex manufactured product like an electric vehicle. Because I ran the stats, and you know, Elon, he's a visionary. Maybe he pulls it off. I mean, if there's going to be someone on Earth that could pull it off, it's probably Elon Musk. But I just want to talk to you guys, just when it comes to investing, like compound annual growth rate, compounding, what does that snowball you to? Well, if in 2023, if they do the 1.8 million vehicles, which they have a really good shot at doing,
yeah.
Okay, if they continue to get a 50% compound annual growth rate in vehicle deliveries, in 10 years' time, they will deliver 103 million vehicles a year.
Or in other words, they won't.
Yeah, or in other words, more vehicles than are sold, you know, annually.
Yeah. The 50% is, it's crazy, right? It really starts to compound very, very quickly.
Yeah. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. What do you think about a company announcing guidance of 50% compound annual growth rate for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of dangerous. I would imagine there's probably a lot of people who are using that in their, say, discounted cash flow when they're modeling forward. And obviously, I don't think anybody's modeling probably 10 years because that would be kind of insane. But there's probably a lot of people modeling 3 to 5 years. And even to hit that would be incredibly impressive. I mean, just the fact that they're still running at a 50% clip and they're at 2 million vehicles a year, or, you know, close to 2 million vehicles a year. Like, that's still crazy. Because again, what are the biggest automakers? What are they doing? Like 10 million, 15 million?
Yeah, 10, 11, 12 10. Million. Like Toyota, the Volkswagens, that kind of. Yeah. They're up just over 10.
Yeah. So I'm looking at what you wrote out. So at 50% a year, by 2027, that'd be basically the size of the biggest automaker in the world. Which would be crazy. I mean, that's in 4 years. that would be astonishing if within basically what, like 15 years of operating, they went from not being a car company, basically, to the biggest car company in the world. That would be the craziest, you know, that's
story.
That's insane for any business, let alone an automaker where they have to build physical factories to actually push these cars through. I mean, like,
complex manufactured product.
And it's a new product that hasn't really been done on mass before. So, you know, it would be crazy impressive. I always continue to be impressed by what Musk is able to do, but I think it's a little dicey to do that. And I would imagine that probably plays a role into why Tesla's price, you know, reflects, you know, the expectation of a lot of growth, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Maybe they hit those expectations. But I'm sure a lot of people keep listening to Musk say 50% and go, yep, okay. Well, he's saying, you know, for the foreseeable future or whatever he said, so I'm going to at least model 3 more years of this. And I think even that would be, you know, very, very impressive if they did that. I don't know.
But anyway, it is crazy. I mean, if, like I say, I don't think they could hit it for any more than like maybe 2, 3, 4 years out into the future, because then the numbers just start getting nutty.
What happens if there's a recession? You would have to expect there's probably at least some point in the next decade where not only do they not grow at 50% a year, but they have a retraction because the industry just shrinks. People are just not buying cars. And if there is a retraction, then they might have to grow at 80% for a couple of years to get back on track of the 50% per year, if that makes sense, because they've got to come down and then go back up. So because it's the auto industry, you've got to expect it's going to be cyclical. So yeah, there is a it'll be very difficult for them to hit that.
That's the thing with percentages. Yeah, as you start losing percentages, it's twice as hard to, you know, get back up.
Yeah.
All right. In terms of the conference call. I just listened to Elon's opening address. It was really weird. I had my headphones in. I was listening to the conference call and had the background music. And then there was just silence for like 5 minutes. And then after that, it just picked up with Elon being halfway through an address. So I don't know if everybody copped that, but I think everybody probably did. So I think we just lost like whatever the hell Elon was talking about for like the first 5 minutes.
Someone heard him go 50% growth per year, and they just pulled the plug. They're like, hang on a second, mute. We can't have this.
That's classic. But like, we didn't even hear, you know, how people open the conference call and be like, I'm the head of investor relations, or past performance not an indicator of future performance, blah, that sort of forward looking statements, blah, blah, blah. We didn't even hear any of that. It was just music, silence. Elon halfway through a talk. So I don't know if everyone else heard that as well.
Weird.
But then I just picked up on whatever Elon was saying, and there's two main things he was talking about. He was talking about Cybertruck, how that's going to be hard to reach production volume, and it's going to be hard for it to be cash flow positive for a while, just because it's a new product. There's so much innovation within the product. It will take them time. And the other thing he spoke about was just their massive focus on AI. He continues to say he thinks that Tesla will be the most valuable company by far in the future. and it's all dependent on AI. He thinks they've got the best AI team in the world, the best real world AI team in the world, and it continues to get better. They were his words, which is great. And he really does think that the future of the company is all to do with AI. But anyway, with that said, that's where I had to end it because you called me.
Oops.
That's why I said, hey, Hamish, what's going on? But anyway, I'll listen to the rest of the conference call. If anything's breaking, I'll talk about it next week. But with that said, Hamish, hold up, that is Tesla. Let's talk.
Very exciting.
Should we go macro?
Let's go. Yeah, let's go macro.
Let's go top down.
Let's go. Yeah, we went bottom up for a little bit. Now we're going to go top down. So we've I've got some inflation and central bank kind of news out of the UK and then the US, which was from last week, but we missed it. So UK reported their September inflation. It came in at 6.7%, which was unchanged from last month. So UK has continued to struggle with very, very bad inflation. It's been much more persistent than what we've seen in Australia, which has also been quite bad, and then even in the US as well. 6.7%, still really high. That came off a 0.5% monthly increase as well. So pretty steep. Monthly increase. The largest downward contributions came from food and non-alcoholic beverages, whose prices fell month on month for the first time since September 2021. Core CPI, which excludes volatile food, energy, alcohol, and tobacco prices, came in at 6.1% year over year, which was down slightly from 6.2% recorded in August. So top line inflation, core inflation in the UK both are both very, very bad and just not coming down fast enough. 0.1% a month is just not, that's not fast enough. That would mean in a year's time, they're still at almost 5%. And then another year later, still well above the target that every kind of country is trying to get to, which is 2 to 3%.
Yeah, there you go.
And yeah, so now kind of all eyes turn to the Bank of the Bank of England, the central bank in the UK. They've raised interest rates now from 0.1% in December of 2021 to 5.25% recorded or raised to last month. So their inflation problem isn't because they haven't been raising interest rates. They've been raising interest rates a lot. It just hasn't had as strong as an effect as the interest rate hikes and other policy changes in the US and Australia. So, most people in the markets are kind of pricing in no rate hike from the bank because inflation didn't go up and it kind of continued to moderate a little bit. Very tricky situation when we look at the UK because they've got high interest rates and still high inflation, which makes it a very, very difficult task. You know, what do you do? What do you do there?
Yeah, that is very tough. That is very tough. They're getting whacked from all angles at the moment. You look left and you've got high interest rates. You look right and you've got high inflation. It's like, that's killer.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty bad. We'll kind of see how the central bank over there continues to decide what to do and how they can kind of
I think it's interesting that people are saying that they're not... They're probably not going to raise rates. Surely they have to.
I think markets priced in a 77% chance of no rate hike. So it's a pretty high consensus, and I think it's because the interest rate hikes that they have done have just had such a dramatic impact on people's rent and on people's mortgages, and that's the tough bit, right? It's like, well, if we don't get inflation under control. Food, clothing, transport, everything is going to just keep getting more expensive at a compounded rate. So we kind of have to do this short-term thing. But there's also supply-side inflation that potentially interest rates are not going to fix at all. And we know that the UK has been exposed to more of those, kind of oil and energy-related inflation pressures. So there's other things that just need to be done within government as well to fix those problems.
But yeah.
Tricky
situation. That's the tricky bit is that, exactly what you say. Maybe this inflation is not directly fixable by just jacking up interest rates.
Yeah.
That's man. I would not like to be I'd not like to be anyone to do with anything over there in politics at the ECB.
I don't want anything to do with the UK. I don't want to be a citizen. I don't want to be in government. I don't. No, I know what you mean.
I don't want to be a cricket fan of theirs. No, I don't even know.
No, you're right.
We retain the Ashes. I don't know. We get belted in the World Cup, though, the Aussies.
Oh, are we?
Anyway, sorry.
Are we losing?
Oh, actually, no, I can have a little dig at the UK because they just got beaten. Their cricket team just got beaten by Afghanistan. So,
oh, wow. There you go.
That's like bad never luck. Happened.
So, wow, anyway. Way to pile on the bad news.
Yeah. And already... in breaking news, England has been beaten by Afghanistan in the Cricket World Cup.
How will it affect the central bank's decision to raise rates? They decide not to raise because everyone's sad from the loss.
They're covering their asses.
Yeah. That's the UK. Moving over to the US. A few days ago, we just missed it last week. We had US inflation data come out. Headline CPI, Consumer Price Index, rose to 3.7%. Was 3.7%, but unchanged from last month. So, completely different story, about half as much inflation in the US as the UK, at least on the top line. There was a 0.4% month-over-month increase, so it's still a pretty strong month-over-month increase. Comes after 0.6% last month, so the last couple of months has been relatively strong. So hopefully that's not the beginning of another kind of cycle. In terms of core inflation, which has for the last few months been actually higher than headline inflation, as energy prices have kind of been coming down and keeping that headline number low. But core inflation came in at 4.1%, which was down slightly, I believe, from 4.2%. I didn't write it in the doc, but I think it was from 4.2%. And a month-over-month increase of 0.3%. So still, still reasonably above the target, but we're getting there. The US is getting there.
It's interesting because now we're like in the middle ground, aren't we? It's like, it's not super high anymore. That's great. Interest rates are higher and we've come down to almost good enough, but not quite.
Yeah.
So I think there will be a lot of speculation as to what the Fed does, but I think they've made it pretty clear that they will continue to raise if they need. And I think if it stays like plateauing, like this is still too high, like 4% still too high.
Yeah.
And I think if they see that plateau, they will continue to raise rates to keep pushing it down further.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, 4% certainly too high. I think 4%, compounded over 3 years, you're almost at a 15% increase in the cost of living every 3 years, which is, that's insane. I mean, you, if you think of it from
that, put it like that.
Yeah. I mean, can you really expect to, have basically a 15% pay rise every 3 years? For a lot of people, that's just obviously not going to be possible. Long run inflation of 4% is not really a solution we should go for. But it is really hard to get that last bit of inflation down, as it's proved to be pretty much everywhere. In terms of the worst categories for year-over-year inflation, I thought I'd include some of these because the highest category is a category that's really weird, and I don't know why they track this category, but anyway. So frozen vegetables came in at 11.6% year over year, legal services, 12.4%, admissions to sporting events is something they track as an individual item. Okay. 18.9%, vehicle insurance was also 18.9%. Food from vending machines was, plus 16%. But the number one category, the number one category that they for some reason they track this specific category, frozen non-carbonated juices and drinks, was up 21.3%. So,
mate, are you sure you're reading from CNBC?
I'm reading from The Onion. Yeah. Why do they track that? Frozen non-carbonated juices.
Wait a second. Frozen non-carbonated juices and drinks.
What's a frozen juice? What's a frozen drink?
Yeah, frozen juice boxes or something. I don't know.
So, yeah.
Frozen drinks.
Unless CNBC.
What drinks get frozen?
I don't know.
You have like, I feel like just surely in transit, fruit juices don't get frozen. Do they? No.
But then, that wouldn't be frozen. Like that would just be juice, right?
I don't know.
Like
I don't get it. What gets frozen? Milk? No, milk doesn't get frozen. juice is just juice.
Maybe it's an American thing, frozen juice.
Maybe it is. Frozen juice boxes? Like, I remember having those at the canteen at school.
Like, you know, those Zupa Dupas? I think that's what it is.
Wait, really? I think ice blocks?
I think so. Yeah, like, I think that's what it is.
Maybe they don't call them ice blocks or icy poles or something over there.
Must be an American thing. Yeah.
Must be an American
thing. Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe, yeah, you know what? Maybe it's like icy poles and stuff, but they for some reason they just call it frozen juice.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe.
Anyway, they're up 21%. So if you're buying frozen, non-carbonated juices and drinks, that's unfortunate.
You're buying Zupa Dupas.
Yeah, you might want to cut back. But anyway, I thought I had to include that because I thought that was just stupid that they track that specific category.
That's so dumb. Well, if it is what we think it is, that's dumb.
Yeah.
But really, we have no idea. Anyway.
That's it. We had a note from Fed officials saying that they don't expect inflation back to 2% until 2026 now. So it was 2025. It's now 2026. So, inflation expected to stick around for a bit longer, but that's been the story for a little while.
There you go. There you go, Hamish. There you go. Careful. Might everybody skip your icy poles this week?
No more icy poles. Every no fifth more icy week, poles. You've got to skip. Yeah.
Oh, dear. All right. Let's move on. This is a bit of a funny story. I wanted to chuck this one in. Mm. Trump's Truth Social is promoting the Biden campaign's new account.
Love it.
I love the first line on CNBC. Not a joke, folks. Former President Donald Trump's social media company is promoting President Joe Biden's campaign account on the platform as the two politicians gear up for a possible election rematch. Quote, dear friend, recently Joe Biden's presidential campaign joined Truth Social. You can find their account at Biden HQ here, Truth Social said in an email sent to users on Wednesday. The email also noted that Trump's campaign account is on Truth Social. As of Wednesday, Biden's account has more followers than the Trump campaign's, sitting at more than 22,000 followers, despite only joining the site on Monday. Trump's campaign account gained 19,000 followers since its creation in February 2022.
Wow. Yeah, that tells me a lot about how good this platform's going. If the president and the person running against the president both have like 20,000 followers.
Yeah. Yeah. Not like 15 million.
No, exactly.
20,000.
Yeah. That's funny.
It is pretty hectic. The first Truth Social post was, let's see how this goes. Converts welcome, said Biden HQ in its first post on Monday. Yeah, Trump, who has 6.4 million followers himself on the site, uses his Truth Social feed as a platform to routinely attack Biden and others he perceives as enemies. Trump, who lost to Biden in 2020 and is the front runner for the 2024 GOP nomination, has largely avoided using X, formerly known as Twitter, even after Elon Musk reinstated his account late last year. The service banned him from the site in early 2021 over tweets regarding the violent pro-Trump invasion of the Capitol on January 6th that year.
Yeah, do you think Trump's going to come back to X? Because we've been kind of talking about this.
I think he kind of has to.
Because, because the campaign's kind of going at the moment. The Republican campaign, at least, is going at the moment. But then, the presidential campaign will be going throughout next year. So you'd have to imagine he has to. Like, he just has to bite the bullet.
I think so.
I mean, even Biden's biting the bullet and joining Trump's platform because you've just got to be everywhere. You kind of, that's just the way it has to be. I don't know.
I think he has to get back on X. Interestingly, the Biden account's profile picture on Truth Social is a depiction of Dark Brandon, a meme generated by the president's supporters in response to Trump backers turning Let's Go Brandon, a misheard vulgar chant about Biden, into an insult. Dark Brandon merchandise has driven over half the Biden campaign's online store revenue, CNBC reported earlier this year. So there you go. It's a meme and they've taken full advantage.
That's
funny. I've got to wonder, like, what the play is here. What's the play? Why would Biden even bother? Surely he's just going to get a whole lot of hate on Truth Social.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I think you've just got to be everywhere if you want to have the best chance at winning, I guess. But yeah, you can't imagine it's going to be too fruitful.
No, I can't imagine so.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't think it really matters in the grand scheme of things all that much. 22,000 people. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? Despite Biden's apparent popularity on Trump's own social media platform, he faces a tough climb to re-election. Even as Trump contends with 4 criminal cases, polls show he's very much in the running to return to the White House. CNBC's All America Economic Survey, which polled 1,001 adults over the phone during 5 days earlier this month, showed that Biden's approval rating had fallen to 37%. In a potential head-to-head matchup, Trump would top Biden 46% to 42%, according to the survey.
That's crazy.
How interesting is that?
Yeah, it is crazy. That is crazy given how much negative press there's been, justified or not, I'm not really saying, but just how much negative press there's been about Trump. It's kind of crazy that he still is outpacing Biden. Like, it just shows, what people think. And I guess, Biden's had his own kind of issues, but also people just attribute anything negative in the economy or anything negative in the country to whoever's president. So, whether it's, high inflation, whatever it is, COVID cases, like whoever's running the show, it's like you're responsible for it, even if it could be out of their control. Some of it's not out of their control, but some of it will certainly be out of their control. So, I think Biden's a little bit of a victim of at least some of that.
Yeah.
But he needs to stop falling downstairs. That's not helping. Anyway.
With that said, he does need to stop falling downstairs.
Yeah.
Oh, classic. Oh, Hamish Hotter, you make me laugh. Anyway, that's all I had to say on Truth Social. Hamish, let's skip this last story. I can summarize it in one sentence. The 30-year fixed mortgage rate just hit 8% for the first time since 2000. All right, great.
Shock, horror.
And let's go to a couple of Q&A questions just to round things out, and then we can finish up if you like. As a reminder, if you want to ask a Q&A question, go to the most recent version of the podcast on YouTube and you can drop us a comment, or you can ask a question natively on Spotify in the Spotify question box.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with this one. This is a fun question. How did your passion for finance begin? Someone in family or friends?
My passion for finance. Well, I think my passion was not so much for finance, but it was for business. I think that's what my passion was for. And I have always had it, but I didn't really realize exactly what it was. For example, when I was a kid, all of the I love video games, but all the video games I really liked was where there was some sort of economy aspect to them. Like Railroad Tycoon, and you had to manage the railroad company and build the track and manage the income and expenses. And I love that.
Yeah.
Even things like Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yeah,
you were building a theme park, but there was also an economy aspect.
Yeah, I used to play. I used to play SimCity. Heaps.
SimCity. Yeah. Oh, I played the hell out of SimCity. Yeah. Right, zoning and building. Apartments and bringing in tax revenue.
Even Age of Empires is kind of the same thing.
That's an economy game.
It's just like building things and I used to be obsessed with Monopoly. Like, I don't know what that says about me, but I used to love that game. Yeah. Even though you're not in too much control in Monopoly, but it's certainly a money-based game. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. What's another one? Age of Empires. The one that I played kind of when I was a little bit older was Civilization V.
Mm.
That is a great strategy, economy-based strategy game. I'd recommend. It's a steep learning curve, but I would recommend that to anyone who's ever thought about playing it. Give that one a go. It's like Age of Empires, but it's like just next level. So it's really good. But I think that kind of. I've always been interested in business and growing and I guess money as well. And then it wasn't until uni where I really figured out that I was studying physiotherapy that I wasn't going to make all that much as a physio, and I needed to try and turn my money into more money. And then I got interested in investing, started a YouTube channel, which kind of did well. And that really was my introduction into running my own business at that point. I didn't think it would be anything at the time, but then it got me into it. And that's where I really was like, yeah, this is my calling. And I really enjoy it. What about you?
Yeah, actually pretty similar. It's funny because, yeah, when you're a kid and growing up, I don't think you think about it too much, but I have kind of reflected and I've been like, oh, you can kind of see these things that you did. Like you said, like you played certain games. And I used to just like sell a bunch of, like I used to import stuff and sell it to kids at school and do all kinds
of things. Yeah, Hamish Hotter hats.
Yeah, I sold like $500 worth of hats. So good on me.
Yeah. Yeah, but were you in high school, dude?
Yeah, it was like year 9.
Yeah, so I'd take that. $500 back then is a mozza.
Yeah, so yeah, I used to just do like weird stuff like that. But then, yeah, in terms of investing, I did 2 years of finance at university. So that's where I really got connected with investing. And yeah, that's mostly it. The other thing was I was on a trip in, I think I was in Ireland or in London. And I just walked into a bookstore and I was studying at the time. So I wanted to get some finance related book. And there just happened to be an enormous stand for the new edition of The Intelligent Investor. And I was like, oh, and I noticed, you know, Warren Buffett had forwarded it. And at the time, I really didn't know that much about Buffett, but I knew who he was. So I was like, oh, he's an investor. I'll pick up that book. And that was my introduction to value investing specifically. So that was just pure dumb luck that I walked into a bookstore and right in front of me was, I was looking for an investing book and I turned to my right. There was a massive stand of The Intelligent Investor there.
It's meant to be.
So yeah, and that's kind of how it started. But you're right. It always, like when you look back, it's like, yeah, it kind of was there. It seems like it was there as like a passion for even at a young age, even if it, you know, came up in, you know, games and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. I'd love to hear from you guys. Like, what do you think? How did your kind of interest in investing and business and finance, how did that come about? Just drop us a comment. It'd be interesting to hear what you guys think. We could maybe include some in the next podcast if we get some good responses. But yeah, I think with that said, we'll wrap things up. I've got to fly because I'm about to get in the car and drive to Sydney. Woo-hoo. So yeah, I'm talking at South by Southwest on Friday, which would be really cool.
Yep.
Unfortunately, this goes out on Saturday, so I can't say I'll see. Well, I might see you there, but it would just be by coincidence if you're already going.
Yeah, you're supposed to say, it was nice to meet you. That's what you say in this episode.
It was great to meet everybody at South by Southwest that I haven't gone to yet, and I haven't met anyone at yet. But yeah, hopefully that'll be fun. And what do you got the next week or so? Just more content?
Yeah, I'm working on a massive video, which will hopefully be out by the time this goes out. So if it's not, it'll be out in the next 24 hours, hopefully after this goes out. So
nice.
Yeah, I won't look forward to it. I won't tease it too much, but it should be a good one.
All right, cool. Look forward to that. All right, guys, thanks very much for tuning in. As always, hope you have a good weekend. Have a good week. And we'll see you guys back here same time next week.
See you guys.
We'll be right back.